The views and opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of WEFT-FM, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. And now here is this week's edition of IMC Radio News.
Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right, it's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, we have two interviews about the IMC's own Paul Riesmandel and a syndicated report about the U.S. and Canada's pharmaceutical industries. But first, PRWatch.org's Radio Spin of the Week.
With this week's edition of the Radio Weekly Spin, I'm Laura Miller. A new study says the Bush administration persistently manipulates scientific data to serve its ideology and protect the interests of its political supporters. The 40-page report, Politics and Science in the Bush Administration, was prepared at the request of Representative Henry Waxman, the Government Reform Committee's ranking Democrat. From agricultural pollution to global warming to workplace safety, the report says, the Bush administration has compromised the scientific integrity of federal research, monitoring, and regulatory institutions and has manipulated the scientific process and distorted or suppressed scientific findings. The report adds, the administration's political interference with science has led to misleading statements by the president, inaccurate responses to Congress, altered websites, suppressed agency reports, erroneous international communication, and the gagging of scientists. White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan dismissed the report. According to the New York Times, McClellan contended that its sponsor, Mr. Waxman, who is widely known for his aggressive inquiry into the tobacco industry, was seeking to score political points. Walmart, concerned about its public image, is using a consultant to analyze that image and has commissioned radio and television ads to try to reverse criticism from local officials, consumers, and others. The New York Times' Constant Hayes reports, it is the first time that Walmart, known for parsimony in its business practices, has invested in reputation research using polling techniques, focus groups, and phone interviews, and then spent more money to try to repair the distressing aspects of what it found. PR giant Fleischman Hillard is tracking Walmart's relationships with consumers, employees, bankers, community leaders, and suppliers. According to the Times, Walmart's rapid growth and economic influence have attracted close scrutiny of the company's reliance on part-time workers, its treatment of female employees, and its disdain for organized labor. Hayes writes, the project found that many people view Walmart as a place of dead-end jobs and that its performance as a corporate citizen leaves much to be desired. To reverse the impression about its jobs, Walmart is broadcasting three ads nationwide that portray it as a great place to work. The U.S. military ordered and then took back a directive that would have restricted journalists from going with American troops on all but routine missions in Iraq. According to the Associated Press, the directive told commanders throughout Iraq that reporters, photographers, and television crews would be prohibited from traveling with the military on some operations as so-called embedded journalists. The U.S. military headquarters in Baghdad rescinded the order shortly after the Associated Press reported on it. No explanation was given. Media coverage of the frequent U.S. raids has resulted in some unflattering pictures of American troops entering Iraqis' homes and holding families at gunpoint during searches for weapons, Saddam loyalists, and anti-American attackers. Fox News Network is suing comedian Al Franken in an effort to block publication of his upcoming new book, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right. The lawsuit claims that Franken's title infringes Fox's trademark on the phrase fair and balanced and characterizes Franken as shrill and unstable, a parasite whose behavior is either intoxicated or deranged. Evidently, the network is still fuming over Franken's hilarious televised run-in with Fox commentator Bill O'Reilly at a recent book publishers convention. The Authors Guild has issued a statement calling Fox's lawsuit deplorable and is compiling a list of other books that could be suppressed under the same legal argument, such as Kurt Vonnegut's Breakfast of Champions or Thomas Mann's The Magic Mountain. For these stories and more, visit PR Watch's website at www.prwatch.org.
Next up, we have a rather interesting interview with Nicole Georges from FarmSanctuary.com by the IMC's own Paul Rismondel, and another shorter interview with a volunteer from Free Radio Milwaukee.
Recording. This is for the this will be for the Urbana-Champaign IMC Radio News.
Okay.
So we'll talk about the Farm Sanctuary. I'm talking to Nicole Georges. And so you spent some time volunteering at a farm sanctuary.
Yes.
And that's in California?
It's in Orleans, California, in Northern California.
So what do they do with the farm sanctuary? What does that mean?
Farm sanctuary is a sanctuary for rescued farm animals. Some of them from factory farms, some of them from individual abuse and neglect cases.
So, let's say they come from a factory farm. How do they come? I mean, how does the farm sanctuary get them?
We can never get any animals from sketchy reasons. Like, you can't actually steal an animal from a factory farm and give it to us. A lot of times, we'll do things like find animals in dead piles or in dumpsters, animals that otherwise would be garbage because they're useless. In hatcheries where they raise chickens for eggs. The eggs that they hatch to replace the layer hens, all the eggs that are girls go to be layer hens, but the boys are useless because they're not the same breed as broiler hens. So they literally throw the male chicks away into dumpsters.
Alive?
Yes.
Live chicks?
Yeah. Sometimes they'll grind them up and use them for fertilizer, but a lot of times they'll, usually, and it's standard practice, it's not just isolated incidents, it's standard practice to just throw away the male chicks because it's more cost efficient than raising them because they're not going to be big enough to be used for meat.
So people will find these chicks?
So say, we'll go and get them out of the dumpster. Or a lot of times, at stockyards, there are dead piles of animals that didn't make it to transit through transit for one reason or another because they have cancer or they're sick or they broke a leg or they just have a simple staph infection or something and they can't walk, and those are downers. And sometimes they'll just throw the downers with the dead pile because they don't want to have to drag them onto a truck and no one will buy them for meat.
But then they're all still alive.
Yeah, so sometimes there's dead piles and there'll be a live animal on top of the dead pile. Or sometimes they'll just leave downed animals that nobody bought just in the stockyard because nobody bought them. So they're kind of no one's property. And the people don't want to handle it and they don't euthanize them. They just leave them there to die of exposure.
Now, this is a very common thing to happen.
Oh, yeah. If everybody went and investigated stockyards in their area, they would definitely find numerous dead animals. It's maybe 2 to 4% of all the animals that go through the transit system during the year. It doesn't seem like a lot, but when there's 80 billion animals that get killed every year, it's a big number.
So at the farm sanctuary, what happens with these animals?
The animals, so say that we go there and the people will allow us to take the animal that would have ordinarily died. It gets veterinary care and it gets to live out the rest of its life in a sanctuary with other animals in its species. And, we have caregivers on staff and it gets taken care of and gets, fresh hay every day. And
so what kind of animals are at the sanctuary?
We have cows, pigs, chickens, sheep, turkeys, goats, chickens, ducks, geese, rabbits.
So all the types of animals that are raised for either feed or for clothing.
Yeah, they've all taken from humans who have used them for their own purposes. Like, a lot of the animals there are specific health problems because they've been genetically mutated so much to suit humans' purposes. Like, the sheep all have so much wool. Like, normally a sheep would shed its own wool, but humans have bred them to have so much wool so that we can get the maximum profit from it that people have to shear them or else they'll die from the heat and things like that. And like the pigs we have there are between 600 and 800 pounds. Because pigs are usually killed when they're 6 months old and they're 250 pounds, but our pigs have kind of missed their death dates. So the full-grown ones are between 600 and 800 pounds, and like their skeletal systems can't even take their weight of their own body, so their bodies start breaking down and their organs start shutting down. And so they have, like, we have a whole barn full of pigs who can't really walk because their feet literally can't hold their weight of their bodies. Just because they've all been genetically mutated so much for humans. So, like, getting out of the factory farming industry is, like, one step for them, but the other step is, like, living a happy life where they're not in pain all the time from how huge they are.
And so how many animals would you say are on the farm?
We have two shelters. The one in Watkinsville, New York, has over 1,000 animals. No, it's over 1,500 animals. A lot of them are chickens from the Buckeye Rescue. And the farm in Orleans, California, has about 600 animals right now.
So let's talk about the rescue that happened in Ohio.
Okay, the Buckeye Egg Farm. Well, there was a hurricane in Ohio where the Buckeye Egg Farm was, and it left, I think, between 2 and 4 million birds from the egg farm trapped just because they were scattered about the state, just still in their cages, like trapped and dying of exposure. So animal advocates went and told Buckeye Farm and, you know, state investigators and humane officials, like, you need to kill these chickens somehow because they're dying. They're starving to death. They don't have any water. They're in, you know, the elements. You need to kill them somehow. So Buckeye Egg Farm said, okay, if you're going to make us kill them, we'll kill them. So they got bulldozers, and we wanted to humanely kill them, of course. They got bulldozers and literally bulldozed the chickens into dumpsters. So a bunch of them were crushed by the bulldozer or crushed in the process of getting bulldozed and then suffocated to death underneath the other chickens. Once they were in the dumpsters, they gassed the dumpsters, which isn't really like a scientific way, like proven way to kill somebody. Some of them maybe just got some of the poison and didn't totally die. And so they just gassed the dumpsters. And right now Buckeye is getting shut down because of the way that they treat the animals and how many complaints they've gotten.
So this is an egg farm?
Yes.
And it's being shut down in Ohio?
Yes.
Wow. And so in terms of rescue then, so the farm sanctuary is trying to...
So we're trying to place them because they have, you know, probably a few million birds right now. And they told investigators, if you make us shut down in 2 weeks, we're going to throw all the birds in a landfill. So what we're trying to do is either find as many homes as we can for the birds that are there, or have them somehow humanely euthanize birds that they can't place.
And so if they were, I mean, putting these millions of birds in a dumpster or in a landfill, I mean, on top of being cruel, isn't that even like ecologically unsound?
It's definitely ecologically unsound, but, you know, like, there are no real humane laws that cover farm animals, so that part doesn't matter. Just because it's a chicken and not, you know, a parakeet, that means that they can do whatever they want. Ecologically, I mean, those places are horrible anyway, so they're really... I don't know. There's no real watchdogs watching the battery cage farm as far as how they affect the environment.
So how did you come to get involved with the farm sanctuary?
I actually did an internship there in like 2002. I was there for a month as an intern where I lived on the farm and actually did farm work. And then I went back this summer as a staff person, a paid staff person, and I did education and gave tours and talked about the animals and worked in the office doing administrative stuff.
Uh-huh. What led you to do this? I mean, what brought you to do this?
I've been a vegan for about 6 years. And I became a vegan for all the reasons there are to be a vegan. And I had been a vegetarian for a long time. And I heard that somebody did an internship and I thought it was amazing that you could actually work with farm animals and actually put your money where your mouth is and do all the things I've been talking about. I could physically help animals that have been rescued from these things. So I decided to do it.
Wow.
For that reason. But people, whether or not you think that humans are supposed to eat animals or have dominion or power over them or whatever, or you believe that God has given you the gift of animals, you still can't actually look at a battery cage farm or a modern day factory farm and say that there's anything like natural or like godlike about any of it. Like 800 pound pigs, like 8 chickens crammed in a box the size of a record. You know, like, there's nothing natural about it at all.
Like, in a record box?
It's like, a battery cage is about the size of a folded newspaper, and it's about 10 inches tall. And there'll be usually between 4 and 6 chickens in each of these cages. But at the Buckeye Farm and some of the ones in Ohio, they found, like, 8 chickens to each cage. And that's where they live their whole lives. They can't spread their wings. They never see the sunlight. Their feet never touch the ground. They get their beaks cut off when they're chicks so that they don't peck each other to death in these tiny cages. And that's how egg chickens live their entire lives. And they lay about 260 eggs per year, whereas normally they would lay like 80 eggs per year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how would someone find out more information both about these issues and about the farm sanctuary?
Farm Sanctuary, you can actually go to www.farmsanctuary.org. And they also have links and pages that talk about each issues for all the animals, for pigs, cows, chickens, sheep, and goats, factory farming, downers, downed animals, all sorts of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nicole.
You're welcome.
I'm speaking to Jane Doe, who is here from Milwaukee, a fellow Midwesterner, and you work with a unlicensed radio station up there.
Yeah.
So what do you call the station now?
Free Radio Milwaukee.
And so what kind of station is it? Do you run 24 hours a day or?
We pretty much set up a schedule. People sign up for when they're available and just sort of flows around that.
Mm-hmm.
Just gets built up as people have time.
So do you have a lot of volunteers?
Yeah. There's probably around 10 or 15, which may not seem like a lot, but it is.
Who regularly come in and do shows.
Yeah. A lot of people don't even necessarily do shows, but they just help out. Like we need a lot of like monetary support, like to pay the rent for the space. So we have a lot of benefit shows and a lot of people like were regulars and helping out. Like a lot of bands regularly wanted to play benefit shows for the station, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And so what kind of programs are on for Milwaukee?
Just about anything you could imagine. There were a lot of the shows were kind of more like audio soundscapes than just like, okay, I'm going to play one song after another. Like a lot of people would kind of use it as an art medium and just like collage different songs or like spoken word things or even like news reports together and just make this like 2 or 3 hour long like audio collage. It's really amazing to listen to when we still have the tapes left over.
That's the fun stuff. So you've recently had some trouble with the FCC?
Yeah, basically what happened was they came and issued a cease and desist order and the landlord freaked out and what ended up happening was we sort of had a hard time finding the truck that was able to fit the antenna and take all the equipment. And the only thing that got left behind was the transistor, and the landlord is holding it.
You mean the transmitter?
Yeah, the transmitter. Yes.
Yeah.
The transmitter.
Which has some transistors in it.
Yeah. but the landlord is holding on to it and basically being a prick. So we're circulating a petition, and we're going to get as many signatures as humanly possible. And basically, the petition says, like, we want our transmitter back, and if we don't get it, proper legal action will be taken.
Because it is your property.
Yeah.
And transmitters are one of these things. They're actually not illegal to own.
Yeah, they're not.
There's no requirement. It's just how you use them.
As we start to wrap up IMC Radio News this week, there's a weekly syndicated show out of Canada called Auntie B's Knees, this week reporting on the U.S. and Canada's pharmaceutical industries.
Hello, this is Auntie B's Knees with your business report for the week of August 11th. 2 weeks ago, the U.S. House of Representatives passed legislation that would allow Americans to import lower-cost prescription drugs from other industrialized countries. The so-called Pharmaceutical Market Access Act must still be approved by the U.S. Senate before passing into law, but has already created a furor of debate in the U.S. and Canada and a backlash from America's most powerful pharmaceutical companies. If passed by the U.S. Senate, the Pharmaceutical Market Access Act would allow U.S. pharmacies and distributors to import certain prescription drugs from Canada, the European Union, and 7 other countries, reselling these imported drugs to American patients. 3 years ago, President Bill Clinton signed similar drug import legislation into law, but that law required the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to certify that imported drugs would pose no additional risk to consumers. Neither the Secretary of Health and Human Services under Clinton nor under Bush has been willing to make this certification, so the new drug import bill orders the Department of Health and Human Services to set up a system that will definitively allow the importation of Food and Drug Administration approved drugs from approved facilities in Canada, the European Union, and 7 other countries. Supporters of the bill hope that the legislation will eventually be made part of a new Medicare prescription drug plan. The U.S. House of Representatives approved the legislation by a vote of 243-186. The vote followed heated debates in Congress that pitted seniors and patients' advocacy groups against the pharmaceutical industry. Supporters of the bill described cancer victims and pensioners unable to afford life-saving medications. Opponents warned that the bill would allow U.S. pharmacies to pawn off low-quality imitation drugs that could be ineffective or even hazardous to patients. Supporters responded by accusing the opposition of exaggerating safety concerns to frighten seniors and by targeting America's pharmaceutical lobby for putting profits ahead of patients. The bill has a wide appeal for American patients, millions of whom buy prescription drugs from or in Canada and other countries. Several studies have concluded that Americans without drug coverage or benefits pay more for medications than anyone else in the world. 60 million Americans, or about 1 in 4, have no insurance coverage for prescription drugs, and 1/3 of the nation's elderly can't afford the prescription medications they require. About $1 billion worth of prescription drugs are shipped from Canada to the U.S. each year, either by mail order or by patients crossing the border to fill prescriptions. Canadian drugs cost an average of 50% less than in the U.S. because Canada has a price review board that keeps costs down, while the U.S. government places no regulations on drug prices. The allergy spray Flonase, for example, can be purchased from a Canadian internet discounter for less than $15, while a similar service based in the U.S. charges $55. Prozac sells for $2.63 a dose through a U.S. website, but costs less than half of that from Canadian and British online pharmacies. The cholesterol drug Zocor sells for almost twice as much in the U.S. as it does in Canada, Germany, Italy, Britain, or Japan. Many other leading prescription drugs have spreads between their foreign and U.S. market prices, ranging from 80% to more than 130%. Though a 1987 law made it illegal to import prescription drugs into the United States by ordering over the phone, the internet, or in person, U.S. officials have traditionally turned a blind eye to Americans importing enough medication for personal consumption and, according to the Canadian International Pharmacy Association, or CIPA, have never charged an individual or a company with illegal importing of medications. CIPA, Canada's leading group of pharmacies providing international prescription services to U.S. patients, has applauded the Market Act bill. Andy Trojak, Vice President of Standards for CIPA, says, quote, "We heartily applaud the U.S. House's wise vote to support seniors and America's working poor who need access to low-cost and safe Canadian drugs. Our members are proud to say that we serve hundreds of thousands of customers each year, and there has never been a major negative incident involving Canadian drugs," end quote. CIPA's members serve more than 1 million uninsured and low-income patients in the U.S., while CIPA's pharmacies sell their drugs at prices up to 85% less than U.S. costs. The association argues that its dealings are not costing U.S. drug companies much money. After all, most of Canada's drugs are made by American pharmaceutical companies, including Pfizer, Wyeth, and Merck, all of which have subsidiaries in Canada. In spite of the fact that the new bill simply legislates an activity that routinely takes place without great harm to U.S. patients or drug companies, the Bush administration has issued a statement describing the bill as, quote, "dangerous legislation," end quote. Mark McClellan, commissioner for the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, has said that the bill creates, quote, "a wide channel for large volumes of unapproved drugs and other products to enter the United States that are potentially injurious to public health and pose a great threat to the security of our nation's drug supply," end quote. William Hubbard, Associate Commissioner for Policy and Planning at the FDA, told the House of Representatives, quote, "Consumers who buy prescription drugs from foreign countries are at risk of suffering adverse events, some of which can be life-threatening," end quote. Supporters of the bill argue that the FDA and the Bush administration are simply protecting the American pharmaceutical industry. In June, a U.S. Congressional Research Service study found that Canadian and U.S. drugs are made and distributed using nearly identical standards. According to Republican Representative Dan Burton, quote, "the only real concern is the profits of the pharmaceutical companies," end quote. Peter Wyckoff, director of the Minnesota Senior Federation, a nonprofit group that has helped consumers obtain cheaper drugs from Canadian internet pharmacies, accuses the FDA of scaremongering. Quote, "they are misrepresenting, and they're doing it on the behest of the pharmaceutical industry to protect their profits," end quote. The U.S. pharmaceutical industry contributed more than $20 million to candidates in the last U.S. congressional election. About 80% of this money went to Republicans. Last year, the pharmaceutical industry employed 675 lobbyists and spent $91 million to twist the arms of congressmen on various issues. Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, one of the major lobby groups for the U.S. pharmaceutical industry, spent more than $14 million alone. Opposing the Pharmaceutical Market Access Act has been a key issue for this lobby in recent months. According to Jeff Truitt, spokesman for the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, quote, "this is a major make-or-break issue for innovative pharmaceutical companies. We've been lobbying full tilt," end quote. The millions spent on lobbying government officials are just a small part of the drug lobby's effort to maintain its profitable status quo. In response to the threat of the Pharmaceutical Market Access Act, drug giant Eli Lilly took out full-page newspaper ads warning that the states would be flooded with counterfeit prescription drugs and that government price controls on medication would cost American jobs. In addition to running these ads, Lilly urged its employees and vendors to contact their government representatives. According to critics, the pharmaceutical industry has spent millions of dollars in recent months to launch a national media campaign portraying imported drugs as unsafe and suggesting that the bill will open U.S. borders to unwanted medications. But public safety does not appear to be the main concern of pharmaceutical giants. Eli Lilly's chief complaints with the proposal are that it forces drug companies, rather than taxpayers, to pay for cheaper drugs, and underestimates the research and development costs of drug manufacturing. Eli Lilly and the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America estimate that it costs $800 million to bring one drug to market. But the advocacy group Public Citizen suggests that this number significantly overstates real research and development costs. Nearly 44% of all drug research in the United States is funded by American taxpayers through the National Institutes of Health. Public Citizen calculates that after eliminating what taxpayers contribute and adjusting for accounting and tax considerations, the average actual outlay by a company for the research and development of a new drug is about $240 million. Even if these costs are high, rewards for U.S. drug manufacturers are skyrocketing. Expenditures for prescription drugs in the U.S. increased 17% last year, making pharmaceuticals the fastest-growing component of U.S. healthcare costs. While overall profits of Fortune 500 companies declined by 53% in 2001, the top 10 U.S. drug makers increased their profits by 33%, making pharmaceuticals America's most profitable business. Pfizer led U.S. pharmaceutical companies with $7.8 billion in profits in 2001, earning 24 cents on each dollar of sales for drugs like Zoloft and Viagra. Merck was the second most profitable U.S. drug company, netting $7.3 billion, or 15 cents on the dollar, for Zocor and other drugs. To promote even more robust sales, these companies devote millions of dollars to advertising and direct marketing each year. In 2001, Merck spent $160 million to advertise its arthritis drug, Vioxx. That's more than was spent to advertise Budweiser or even Pepsi. In fact, research suggests that U.S. drug companies spend twice as much on advertising, marketing, and administration as they do on research and development. Families USA looked at the annual reports of nine leading drug companies to discover that in 2001, Merck spent $6.22 billion on marketing, advertising, and administration, but only $2.46 billion on research and development. Pfizer spent 35% of its $32 billion in revenue on marketing, advertising, and administration, compared with 15% on research and development. It all makes the $1 billion in annual illegal sales of prescription drugs from Canada to the U.S. seem like small potatoes. But that hasn't prevented a backlash from pharmaceutical giants keen to stake out their profit-making territory on both sides of the border. Last week, Pfizer informed 46 Canadian pharmacies that they must now buy their medicines directly from the company instead of through wholesalers. Pfizer announced that it is restricting its sales of medicines in Canada to prevent Canadian pharmacies from selling the drugs back into the U.S. market at cheaper prices. Pfizer joins Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, AstraZeneca, and Wyeth in similar efforts to stem the flow of pharmaceuticals from Canada to the United States. Along with restrictions on sales of drugs to Canadian pharmacists, the companies have earmarked money to put pressure on the Canadian government to end its pharmaceutical price controls. Even if the U.S. Pharmaceutical Market Access Act becomes law, making the sale of prescription drugs from Canada to the U.S. legal, consumers on both sides of the border might lose. Some observers fear that the flood of prescription drugs southward will create shortages in Canada that will drive prices up north of the border. While the current bill provides no guarantee that American pharmacies will pass on the savings they get from buying Canadian drugs to their American customers. Instead, U.S. drugstores could simply keep medicines marked up and pocket the difference. Overall, it's a sick business. Consider pulling your investment dollars out of America's pharmaceutical giants, buying generic medications, or looking into alternatives for the prescription drugs being pushed by big companies. Signing off, this is Andy Beesney's reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.
That's about all for IMC Radio News this week. Remember that IMC Radio News and all of the Independent Media Center's projects cannot be run without community volunteers just like you. To learn how to get involved, go to www.ucimc.org, come down to 218 West Main in Urbana, or leave a message at 344-8820. Absolutely no experience is necessary, and new faces are always welcome. Thanks for listening, and this is Sam for IMC Radio News.